This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, hello, hello, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 a.m. on Friday, April the 1st, also known as April Fool's Day. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Khoo Soo Chuang and Tan Chen Lee.
Good morning, La.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, so early in the morning.
It's been a long week. It's Friday, long week. The cusp of another weekend. I hope you've got lots of good things planned in store for you and hopefully no pranks today. Are you guys into pranks? Are you the sort who...
Not really.
You said I couldn't, La, Shaz. That's why I'm not saying anything now.
Oh, that's why you're so well behaved morning.
Which is kind of odd.
Well, it has become a tradition for us at The Morning Run to check in with the comedy scene on April 1st to honor April Fools. So later at 7:45 a.m., we're going to be speaking to Rizal Van Gezel, the man behind Crack House Comedy Club, for a pulse check on the entertainment scene. But we also have a lot of other stuff lined up today. What do we have?
At 7:30, we have something more serious, which is we review the latest economic indicators coming up from the U.S. and how the fortunes of America impact the rest of the world. So Preston Caldwell, the head of economics at Morningstar, joins us.
Okay, 8:45, we discuss the structural economic reforms needed here in Malaysia, coming from Bank Negara's annual report and economic outlook with economist Jeffrey Williams.
And today's breakfast grill is not to be missed because Wong Xiaoning will be speaking to Pengerang MP and former Deputy Dewan Rakyat Speaker Datuk Sri Dr. Azalina Othman on her push to address party hopping as well as the political dynamics within Malaysia from her vantage point as an UMNO insider. We're going to have all this and more today on The Morning Run. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. That was The Beatles with Can't Buy Me Love. And before that, you heard Velvet Underground with Who Loves the Sun. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Mokhtar, Wong Xiaoning, not Wong Xiaoning. Happy April Fools!
Hey, guys, it's me. I'm back. Just Wong doesn't sound like that.
No, that was Khoo Soo Chuang and, of course, Tan Chen Lee. 6:07 a.m. in the morning. And we are looking at the first story on our docket. It's about time. So the question here today is, do you experience time famine? It's the feeling of having too much to do and not enough time to do it. I think that's something familiar for many of us out there. And the conventional approach to addressing time famine is scheduling. You know, get your schedule set out, set aside specific blocks of time to focus on a particular task so you use your time efficiently. But there is a recent research that shows that suggests scheduling isn't the be-all and end-all of time management, that it can, in fact, backfire on us.
In fact, it will actually make you more frantic because you have to get a lot done in very little time. Researchers found again and again that having upcoming events in your calendar will make you feel more rushed and discourage you to fill your available time with useful tasks. So,
yeah.
You agree with it already.
No, this is a very Masale thing, this especially very American thing, right?
Why do you say that?
You know, it's just kind of things that Americans do, and they're very efficient. You know, they're very productive and they work really hard. Actually, I'll give it to them. The ones who work hard really work hard, and they try and, you know, pack in like 5 meetings in the morning, 5 meetings in the afternoon. A lot of people, they do that, right? But then
it's not just Americans. You can find those people who do those things.
Super efficient alpha type
well.
A people. People are Wong Xiaoning, lah, you know what I mean? Sorry.
Well, but the article is saying otherwise.
Yeah, so for those people who do that, I'm not saying Wong here, but specifically, right? But because I've gone through that process myself and I try to pack it, be as efficient as possible. Time flies really, really fast, and you don't get a breather. You don't get a time to recollect and catch your breath. So today at this vintage that I am on, I try and fix maximum 2 meetings a day, 1 maybe 2 meetings, and then I spend the time the rest of the time reflecting, gazing at my navel, and contemplating the meaning of life. It doesn't pay a lot of money, but it's very useful.
I think I'm more like a mixed of things here. I would have some sort of blocks of time, but I wouldn't schedule to the T of things, you know, like really like per hour, I'm going to do this, I'm going to spend an hour or half an hour on this task. Not that kind of minute scheduling. What about you, Shaz?
So I want to break down a little bit what the research says about time. And it's really about time perception. I think that's the point that they're trying to put across, right? If you have an appointment in your calendar that's like a focus, the time that comes before that, it can seem... it can seem shorter, like you said, Chuang, the things simply flow by, right? Whereas if you didn't have that thing to focus on, you actually make more use of your time, apparently. And the point is that how you feel about the amount of time you have influences the decisions that you that you make on what you want to do. So those who feel less rushed will tend to actually be more productive, surprisingly, while those who feel more rushed may be less so, according to all these studies that, these researchers have done, which I thought was pretty interesting in a way, that the way you feel about time will influence what you do.
Actually, yeah, I find that my approach to time is actually better served by itemizing what is important, less important, and least important. So when I know that I've got to do these three things today, I'll get them done. Mm. And I think that, for me, improves efficiency, because if I have these things that I don't know how important it is, I'll take my time doing it.
So it's not so much about scheduling for you, but it's more about prioritizing what needs to be done in what order.
Yes.
I feel especially time crunch when I have to go on for a holiday, actually, which is a little bit weird, I know. So, like, before I go on a holiday, I have all these things that I want to do, and I don't know why I want to do them all before my holiday. It includes washing my toilet.
Because you don't want to come into a manky lavatory, right?
Yeah. You go out and you stay in hotels and stuff like that, and it was like nice, clean bathroom. And
not the hotels I go to. my toilet is an improvement on the hotels.
So before I go on a vacation, I actually feel more stressed. So, which is, I think it's reflective of what this article is saying, because I'm trying to pack too many things before my holiday.
Yeah, super efficient people like to do too many things during the holiday, so they come back even more tired.
That's also true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know people like that.
So I
don't plan anything for my holidays now. I just go there. I've got like a 7-day block. And then people ask me, where are you going to go? I say, I don't know. Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? I don't know. Maybe I'll just contemplate my navel for 7 days.
Well, so last question, I guess, before we wrap this conversation up. But what do you do if you do feel time strapped? How do you deal with feeling that you just don't have enough time to do everything?
Take on fewer things.
All right.
Cut some things off. You just have to prioritize and really, you know, choose the most important things.
All right. So just accept that, you know what? This is how much we can get done. You know, no need to stress about it. We'll do the rest tomorrow. Tell us what you think. What are your favorite time management hacks? You know, do you feel, how do you deal with time famine? Do you think scheduling less could be the option for you? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into some messages, and when we come back, we're going to discuss whether we're seeing a resurgence of the dumb phone. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Red Eyes by The War on Drugs. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li, 6:18 in the morning. Chuang, this next story could have been written by you. So Guardian opinion writer Max Fletcher writes about his enduring attachment to what's being called a dumb phone, which is in contrast with the ubiquitous smartphone. And a recent BBC article also looks at the growing trend of users who are renouncing their iPhones and Samsungs for a much more basic mobile phone, whether it's the relaunched Nokia 3310 or a Lite phone, which is a new model of phone where you can listen to music and use Bluetooth, but there's no internet browser or social media access.
Yeah, people who do that are the same kind of people that leave the city and go and live in the suburbs, or they move from KL to Jandabai. Why? Because they don't want to be inundated by the traffic, the cost, the expensive chap fun, you know, those kind of things. You know, they go there and go back to basics. It's the same principle.
Or instead of listening to Spotify, you go for, I don't know, an LP player, you know. It's like going, or instead of digital camera.
Back to basics, lah.
Yeah, going back to the film camera, you know. Things. I think it's a trend.
I met young people who do that, actually. When I went to town the other day, Kampung Atap, actually. You know, young people there that play records and, you know, they...
It is a trend. So this article that we were looking at, you know, I don't know whether you remember, Steve Jobs actually launched or unveiled iPhone back in 2007. It has been 15 years, and I didn't realize that.
There's been 13 of them since then.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you know what I mean?
Good point.
Very good point there. And I actually wonder, why do people want to make this switch? Other than one of the things that we were saying, the young people tend to do it. Maybe it's a trend, it's a fashion. But is it also something for us to, some people will just want to cut away from all these social media distractions, or maybe, you know, you just want to have that peace in your life.
Well, I kind of find it quite weird that things which are, we call a phone, but actually they're also a map of television, they're a movie theatre, they're a library, and they're all kinds of things. And there's 50 different things that they are. But actually, people just want to have a phone. People just want to be in contact, right? And that's why you buy a phone. And back in the day when it was just a phone, and that's all you had with the phone, and that's like, you had a text, and that's all it did, right? You just spoke to people with it. in voice and as well as in text. And
maybe,
that was it.
Maybe play the snake game.
Yeah, people yearn for those simple, basic, halcyon days where it was all about just being you and me, you know what I mean? They all get all warm and fuzzy inside.
I mean, that is a romanticization of what phones were to us before. Because back when they were introduced back, you know, when mobile phones first came up, they were also seen as these really efficient, helping people to be more productive, you know, being able to be to communicate on the go. On my part, I don't know if I'd be able to go back to using a more basic mobile phone simply because I get a lot of use out of my phone at the moment. I like being able to use Google Maps when I'm out in the street. Reading this article on the BBC, which spoke to people who do use their basic mobile phones, they talk about having to plot out how they want to go in advance, which I know, you know, you can do that. I'm just not sure that I want to do that. I would rather just kind of get to where I need to go and then use my Google Maps to, and follow the blue dot to where it is I need to walk to, you know?
Yeah, we rely on it so much now, but there'll come a time, Shaz, there might come a time when you just like, just had it with technology and it just does your head in and you want to go back to those simple days.
Yeah, and data privacy.
That's
something that is on the concern of many people. So instead of having your, I mean, I don't know.
Do you guys know? Everybody uses Google, right?
Yeah.
And your location is turned on all the time?
I heard.
Yeah. If you go to Google Maps, right, and you check out your timeline, you can go as far back as, well, when you first bought your phone, where exactly you went to on a daily basis, hour by hour, place by place.
Is it possible to turn it off?
Go and check. Oh, yeah, of course you can turn it off, but I think they're still watching.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So, okay, you're talking about the sort of concerns people have with smartphones, with privacy. Yeah. I mean, that could be a reason why people go to mobile phones. I don't know if we'll see it in the mass scale as we used to. I think they're definitely pockets now. And one curious thing that's being pointed out by the BBC article is the fact that it's actually among the younger folk. You know, you think it's maybe among people like of the more senior
advanced vintage,
you know, who because I've heard you say many times before, Chuang, you
can't wait to get rid of it.
Wait till the day where you can not use your smartphone anymore. I don't know why you can't do it now. You could, you know, it just makes your life a little bit more inconvenient, perhaps. But it's possible.
Work. Still gonna work. So the phone is. It's an indispensable part of, you know, modern productivity.
Actually,
but once you don't have to work, just ditch the damn thing.
Well, and when I was not really working, I actually thought about switching to a dumb phone. Well, because it was just, I don't really need a smartphone at a time. I have an iPad with me or a computer, which
those things
I don't
are just
really
as bad, by the way.
So I don't really need a phone, right, that is a smartphone.
And that's another thing about this article, I think, in terms of people who use their basic phones. They are still using computers. They are still using tablets. So they're just not using it on their phone.
Yeah, and the other aspect that I think of is could be environmental issue. Well, think of how long does this phone really last you? Maybe 2 years, 3 years, depending on how it is. Whereas I think a Nokia 3310 could last you longer.
Well, if you're from Penang, you try and get as much use from it as possible. 10 years, maybe, hopefully, touch wood, but cannot lah.
But cannot because it's just the way it is being built. You know, it doesn't last that long. So let's look at our AirPods. Every 2 years, you have to ditch it already. So it's not really.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't work
AirPods
very long.
Are like $1,000 each, right? A pair?
Depending on what model you get.
Really, yeah. But then people never buy AirPods. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Bangsat.
The truism there. All right. 6:24 in the morning. Tell us what you think. Would you ever go back to a basic mobile phone? Perhaps you're already using a basic mobile phone. How do you find using it in this age where, you know, interconnectedness and just always being on the go is kind of de rigueur? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're heading into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. And after that, a look at global headlines. Here is Grateful Dead with Shakedown Street to take you to the news. BFM 89.9. That was Silk Sonic, the duo of Bruno Mars and Anderson .Paak with that smooth tune, Skate. When was the last time you put on a pair of skates?
This morning, in the shower.
That's dangerous, Trong. That's a safety hazard.
Not when you're imitating James Brown.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing. Yeah, when your floor is soapy.
Got it. Anyways, it's 6:40 a.m. and we are taking a look at what's making headlines around the world. Tell me what has caught your eye this morning, Chuang.
Well, this happened 2 days ago, but Bruce Willis, bad news for him, he's stepping away from acting after a million years of doing so because he's been diagnosed with something called aphasia. Aphasia is a little bit of a mental... it's kind of like a mental problem, brain problem. I think it affects... It's a neurological problem, that's right. Much better said than me. So in which the person who is afflicted tends to jumble up his words as a result. So if he, if for example, you say, I'm having a nasi lemak, right? He'll say, nasi lemak having I, like that.
Really?
I mean, yeah. That's the... I'm not sure if that's...
It's a bit like Yoda, you know?
Not sure that's exactly the case, but I suppose that is what comes to mind when
something
you think
like
of aphasia.
When you jumble up the sequence of the words, yeah.
And he's 67 years old at this point. He's had a very long career, and I think there were a lot of well wishes on social media for him. That the condition does not deteriorate too badly. I think it was sad news for the acting fraternity for sure. He's just been a presence for so long.
And he'll still be alive for a very long time. You know why? Because he had 4 episodes of Die Hard.
I believe so. I do have a confession.
I've
actually never seen Die Hard. Is that terrible?
It's brilliant. It's a good show.
I should sit down and watch that, do a marathon of it. Okay, what else has caught your eye, Chun Li?
I'm going to move the other actor, which is in the Russia-Ukraine war. So this piece actually came from Bloomberg that says, President Putin is actually asking people to pay him in rubles for the oil or gas that he's been supplying, and they can actually pay it through Gazprom Bank. And surprisingly, out of the 7 banks that was being sanctioned, they are actually not part of that 7, together with Sberbank. So now we know why, because they actually to be kept, to utilize, to be getting all this payment in rubles, you know, to keep the flow going.
This is part of the global retreat from the dollar and its status as a reserve currency. Because if you want to buy my stuff, you better pay me in the currency that I want, right? Rather than dollars.
I mean, to some analysts, the move is really just a political... It's kind of like he's trying to flex his muscles, yeah? Because they get the money anyway, whether it's in euros or dollars, you know, but they want it in rubles in a way to make it difficult for European countries. That's one. And the fact that he's set this ultimatum, it's really... I mean, it's seen by blackmail as from European countries like Germany and I think also Austria, who get a lot of their gas from Russia. They have said that they're not going to abide by this, that they will still continue to honor their contracts with euros. We're waiting to see, you know, because they will be affected if they don't get gas. But because it's heading into spring and summer, it's not going to be as bad as if it was in winter. So maybe, you know, they think that they can go through the pain in the meantime.
No, but I'm just a little bit surprised that out of the banks that was being sanctioned, this and I cannot pronounce it really right, Gazprom Bank, I hope I got it right, and Sberbank is... Why are they not being sanctioned?
Because they are used to supply oil and gas to Europe.
So they have kept them in there, you know, to be ready, because they're not ready to cut gas supplies from Russia. So in the first place, they are already planning this.
Yeah, so if you want to buy my gas and my gas supplies, you know, 1 of every 2 households in Europe, you've got to pay me in rubles, lah. Otherwise, I ain't going to give you any more gas.
So we'll see what happens on that front. We do know that all the countries are trying to source other alternative supplies of gas. But again, this is going to take time. So that's the issue, getting those contracts in place. In the short term, that's likely to feel that pain.
Yeah, that war in Ukraine is causing all kinds of energy crisis. So President Biden in America, he's drawn down on their SPR, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. He's going to draw down by 180 million barrels of oil. And it's going to that's only going to last in the next 6 months, because, you know, Americans love to guzzle gas, right? They just love to traverse the entire subcontinent in their cars, in their huge V8 Chevy trucks, right? So that takes a lot of petrol. Strangely enough, in America, they call petrol gas, but it's not a gas, it's a liquid. But hey, that's America for you.
But hey, and I mean, President Biden is under a lot of pressure because of rising gas prices or petrol prices in the U.S. So he wants to be seen as doing something. This is doing something. It's not the first time that the U.S. has issued, has released oil from their strategic reserves, but this is the biggest one. So it's going to be closely watched to see whether whether there'll be any impact. I think if you look at Brent crude prices overnight, it did fall a little or a lot, 6% to $104 per barrel, whereas WTI actually went up 0.7%. Another aspect to Biden's decision was that he's actually going to penalize U.S. oil producers if they're not productive on their land and using their wells. So that's also another thing, whether that will help to raise supply in the short to medium term.
Some analysts actually were thinking whether this release of the SPR will actually do much in the market, because in the past, when he has released some of these reserves, it didn't really do much in the long term, maybe just a very short term kind of spike, and that's it. You know, so a lot of questions on how this would move.
All right, 6:45 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we take a look at the local newspapers and portals. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. That was Electric Land by Bad Company. I hope you think we're good company. We're the Morning Run, Shazana Chuang and Chun Li, 6:50 a.m. and that time of the morning when we take a look at what's making the front pages of our newspapers and portals. So who'd like to start us off with the stories of the day?
Chun-Li. I will start. Yes. So I think this is all over the headlines everywhere. Our borders is reopening today. And one of the aspects that I see is actually a comment made by Sabah Association of Tour and Travel Agent Chairman Dato Sri Winston Liao. So he posed this question on whether we should make it more attractive for foreigners in terms of the COVID test rate. So apparently the RDK test for foreigners is 160 ringgit, whereas for Malaysian is 100 ringgit, whereas the PCR test is 350 for tourists, whereas for Malaysian is 250. So should we do something standardized, you know, to make it cheaper and more attractive for foreigners to come in? So this is something that he has mentioned, you know, and kind of kept me thinking about it also.
I have to say, I was really surprised that the RTK test was so expensive in Sabah. I did not realize it was up to 160 ringgit for an RTK test. I suppose it's different from the 5 ringgit tests that we get from the pharmacy, which is also an RTK.
Yeah,
maybe I think this is a clinical one.
Yeah, it's a clinical test. But yeah. I think traveling will still be limited maybe because of the SOPs and the uncertainty over the guidelines. I know that this morning the borders are open. Some people have already sent me screenshots about the causeway between Singapore and Johor, already chock-a-block full of cars. The Edge running the story this morning on page 4 saying that travel insurance are no longer required to enter Singapore. So, I mean, I think we're taking the first tentative steps towards full recovery, but a lot of people are still maybe a bit tentative because of the guidelines involved. I have no idea what it would take to go to Thailand, for example.
I have to say, I think there's still a lot of confusion. The Malay Mail also carried an article about how some Singaporeans are going to wait a bit before they make their way across the causeway simply because they don't know what the SOPs or guidelines are yet. They're still unsure for day trips, for example, what's needed on their part. So I do think that we will see traffic build up over the next days, hopefully. It's been a long time since we've seen the causeway as full as it used to be.
I think a lot of players in the tourism sector also feels the same as what you just said, Shaz. They don't expect a lot of influx of tourists in April, but maybe in May, it might gradually increase, but not a huge jump in April.
Yeah, the Edge page 2 saying that the government has so far not approved or made any payment to the operator of Masjidjatra's application. That's according to the Health Minister, Khairul Jamaluddin. He says that the talks ongoing are to achieve a win-win situation.
He addressed the Dewan Negara yesterday. He went through pretty grueling questioning by the senators of the Dewan Negara. He did say that all the data of Masjidjatra is owned by the government and that the app server was also in Kuala Lumpur. There were reports initially that the server was in Singapore because the company is registered in Singapore. Khairul Jamaluddin said that that's not the case. The government is in full control of the information. So I'm not sure whether that is enough to assuage all concerns, but Khairul Jamaluddin, as well as the Minister of Finance, will be addressing the Public Accounts Committee in April. So I'm sure that they'll be asked to furnish more information moving forward. Hopefully things will become more transparent and clear as more details come out.
Yeah, just to repeat, Code Blue, the news portal citing court documents said that there was reported earlier that there was a licensing agreement between KPI Soft and Masjidjatra Sinjuan Mehad. That was October 2020, which said that KPI Soft would transfer the intellectual property of Masjidjatra. That would be basically our data, and grant software license for the app to Masjidjatra for 339 million ringgit. So that's a lot of money.
We had a lot of discussions on this over the past week. Do look up the podcast on the BFM app and on our website. We spoke to the PAC chairman himself, and we also spoke to Bu Su Lin, editor-in-chief at Code Blue, for all the different perspectives. And we also spoke to a lawyer on just the legal obligations that the government has to hold to protect our information. So check that out on the app. Chun Li.
Yes, and another not so tourism-related or even Masjidjatra-related news, but a little bit related to healthcare, is that Malaysia and China ink an MOU on TCM, which is traditional Chinese
medicine.
Oh, that's
interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting, actually. I also thought so. So this actually includes cooperation for information sharing, training, as well as R&D, and also a proof of the strong relations between the two countries, as said by our health minister, Khairi Jamaluddin.
Wow, okay. Well,
I never thought that TCM could be such... I mean, we need an MOU to actually...
I don't know. In my circles, I think of TCM as Tan Chong Moto, you know. It's the listed company, right? When you say TCM.
I think of TCM as the supermarket. There is a supermarket,
no, that's
TCM,
TMC.
Right? Oh, okay, there we go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I hope you don't have aphasia like Bruce Willis.
No. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. Early onset, perhaps.
No, lah. You're too smart for that. Anyway, Paige... That's a compliment, by the way, Shaz.
Don't think it has anything to do with smart, strong, but all right. Moving on, you were saying.
Page 3, The Edge pointing out that foreign investors have emerged as the largest net buyers in stocks with a combined net value of about 7 billion ringgit, and they're buying plantation companies and CPO prices at this point in time. Spot prices are 5,800 ringgit.
Ah, so they're the ones driving up the FBM KLCI, putting us in the green on a year-to-date basis. Interesting stuff. 6:56 in the morning, we are heading into the 7 a.m. news bulletin, and when we come back, we'll take a look at how global markets closed overnight. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.